Gas might not stay this low.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. It's been nice in this economy to have much lower energy prices, but several developments are working against that right now. Oil is back above $50 a barrel this morning. It had dropped all the way to $33. OPEC's production cut and the violence in the Middle East have driven the price back up. Plus, Europe suddenly has a big supply problem with natural gas. Russia and Ukraine are bickering again, and Russia's gas isn't getting to several European countries, and that's creating a supply problem with natural gas. Energy companies aren't complaining too much. Their shares are higher this morning. And that's helping to drive the rest of the stock market. The Dow is up 112 points in the early going, more than a percent, to 9,065. The NASDAQ is up 22. The S&P 500 has climbed 14. In Europe, stocks are up 1 to 2%. And in Asia, the markets finished with mixed results. Today, Toyota said it's shuttering all of its Japanese plants for 11 days in February and March. The last time Toyota stopped production in Japan was 1993, and that was for one day. We're joined by Ashvin Chotai. He's the managing director of Intelligence Automotive Asia. Ashvin, what is the level of concern at Toyota?
I think it is very concerned. And the way the global marketplace is going, I can't think of a single significant auto market which is expected to grow in 2009. Mm-hmm. And Toyota, being one of the largest manufacturers in the world, it has to take corrective action in terms of adjusting its supply.
Well, obviously, Toyota isn't immune to what's going on with the economy. But in the scheme of things, is it still in the best shape of the automakers?
I think the difference between Toyota, Honda, Nissan, and the U.S. Detroit 3 is that coming into this crisis, the Detroit 3 were already in fragile positions. And what this slowdown has done in 2008 is to just tip them over the edge. When we talk about Toyota and Honda, Nissan, they've been enjoying record profits coming into this crisis. Mm-hmm. So they've had a bit of a war chest to prepare for this situation.
Do you think the economy has possibly leveled the playing field a bit more between the Japanese automakers and the U.S. automakers?
I wouldn't say that. I think we have to start thinking about what will happen after this crisis. The jury is still out on the long-term survival prospects for GM and Chrysler particularly. And even if they do survive, they'll have to scale back their operations quite a bit. You could argue that once the recovery starts, the difference between well-run companies and not-so-well-run companies will widen.
Ashvin Chotai with Intelligence Automotive Asia. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want to get away? I do. But affording it is the issue. Based on what I'm hearing, though, you can probably get a nice, posh hotel for a decent price right now. Jill Barchet has more.
Planning to visit New York anytime soon? Midtown hotels that usually go for $300 a night have cut their rates on some nights to $100. And the bargains don't stop there. Bjorn Hansen is a professor at New York University specializing in the hospitality industry. He says a drop in tourism and business travel has hotels scrambling to attract guests.
The more surprising numbers are those hotels that maybe last year were charging $1,200 a night on a busy night, and now we're charging $200 a night. This looks like it might be the worst January that we can find in the history of the hotel industry.
Vacancy lights are flashing in almost every city in the nation. In Miami, for instance, nearly half of all hotel rooms sit empty. And it's not just because people are staying home. The last real estate boom launched construction on scores of new hotels that are now finished and open for service. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet from Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, January 6th on Marketplace.org. Out-of-pocket costs for medical care have shot up 40% in the last 10 years. I doubt that surprises you. But a study out today says chronic diseases, and more of them, are to blame. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
Alexis is an urban planner in White Plains, New York. At age 30, she has two chronic illnesses, fibromyalgia and gastroparesis. Even with health insurance, her co-payments for doctor's visits and prescription drugs are $250 a month.
It is a lot of money. There are sometimes certain doctors I think I should visit, but don't because I just don't want to spend $20.
That balancing act is becoming more common, according to a new study in the journal Health Affairs. Study author Kathy Paez found that middle-aged Americans today are 10% more likely to suffer from more than one chronic disease.
Because they have multiple diseases, they're having to purchase a number of medications, and then their co-payments are higher because employers are coping with the costs by reducing benefits.
Paez says obesity and a lack of exercise often lead to more chronic illness. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Congress is back to work today, and the top priority is an economic stimulus package. Based on the emails we get, I'd say the constituents would really appreciate it if Congress thinks about the working people this time. Commentator Kathleen Denny is an out-of-work airline mechanic.
My Aunt B says there's going to be a depression. Last year, when pundits barely whispered recession, she knew the signs. Big mergers and big layoffs. I think Aunt B is right. From where I stand, things have been getting worse for a long time. Working class people like me, we paid for what they called prosperity. Profits in the stock market soared while we paid in wage cuts, lost benefits, more dangerous workplaces. What I care about is protecting people like us from people like them. Who's them? The people who own banks and big companies. They're not in business to provide us with jobs, health care, or a dignified old age. Their business is profits, nothing else. They're lined at the trough for even more multi-billion dollar handouts from the Treasury, but when they talk about economic recovery, they only mean profits, not people. With that kind of money, people like us could set up a public works program at union scale to take care of human needs and defend our resources. We could go to work alongside family farmers to supply healthy food, build schools and public transit, restore streams and maintain our public spaces. And our dignity through old age is precious. Far too precious to be glued to stock market swings or the fortunes of any one company. The company I worked for dumped our pensions outright, and the stock market dive rocked Aunt B's pension fund. We need a movement now to make Social Security a universal retirement program. Social Security was born in the labor upswing of the Great Depression, and people like us have unfinished business.
Kathleen Denny is a veteran machinist and airline mechanic. She's writing about that experience, and she lives in Oakland. Let's look at another industry that's really struggling with the economic fallout. Recycling. With people buying less of everything, used paper, glass, and cans are stacking up in warehouses all over the country. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
Ed Byrne manages Peninsula Packaging in California's Central Valley. His company makes all those clamshell packages berries and lettuce come in. But instead of making them out of petroleum like his competitors, Byrne prefers to use shredded water bottles.
It's mother's milk for us, although it's garbage to anybody else.
And you'd think Byrne would be awash in the stuff, given that Americans throw away an estimated 2.5 million plastic bottles every hour. The problem is most of the facilities that clean and shred those bottles into plastic flakes are overseas.
We're buying some from China, and we have some coming in from South America, and we're still using a lot more virgin resin than we would like to because we can't get enough flake.
Byrne says his goal is to use 100% recycled plastic to make his product. But Alex Halu with the Los Angeles Bureau of Sanitation says the economics of the global supply chain have worked against him.
When the oil market was at all-time high, it was cheaper for us to take a ton of recyclables from the port of Los Angeles, ship it all the way to China, versus to take one ton of recyclables from the port of Los Angeles and ship it to Riverside.
even though Riverside is only 60 miles away. But with the Chinese market for recyclables now in the dumps, Liu says places like Riverside are starting to look more promising.
We need to find markets in California, in the United States, where a lot of these products could be recycled locally and put money back into the local economy.
And this is where President-elect Barack Obama's stimulus package comes in. Jerry Powell is with the industry magazine Resource Recycling. He says with a little federal help, all of that recyclable material stacking up in warehouses could be put to use.
When you land in an airplane at the Phoenix airport, you're landing on cement made with rubber tires. In Baltimore, there's miles and miles of streets that have glass in the asphalt replacing rock.
Powell says true recycling isn't what happens at the bin, it's what happens at the mill, where the things we recycle are made anew. And he says infrastructure projects like these would ensure more of those mills, and the jobs they create, are located here in the U.S. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
And I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.